right, here we go.
I'm gonna make it rain, baby. Make it rain.
As I slowly unbutton your blouse. Why are women's buttons backwards?
I'd take him home with me.
There's a big difference between saying, like, intimate sound effects were very well done. Like, between being like, yo, you suck dick good.
It's fucking art. I will fight people.
Welcome to the Backroom Podcast.
And welcome to the podcast. We are live with episode 2. We are so excited to bring you this international version of the Backroom Podcast. With us today are Bravery Audio.
Hi.
From South Africa. And Ava Lee from the beautiful country of Germany.
Hello.
So we all have had the chance to meet and kind of work with each other. And as we've done so, it's been kind of interesting to talk to them about the different languages and perceptions that they have about English.
Do I not and get another also... introduction?
Sorry, my bad.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. And I'm sitting here going, "Duh." Sorry. Now I have to cut and paste all this out.
No, you don't. You really don't. This is great.
Shame.
Oh my gosh. And my dear friend and wonderful co-host, Not Natalie.
Hi. Welcome back to all our listeners. I hope I'm international to at least some of you.
That is interesting, and that the perceptions of people around the world, like, you know, us as Americans, we don't look at it, we have an accent, we're not interesting, you know, and so, but yet people in other countries find that, you know, very interesting, right? So for the two of you, what do you think about kind of different accents that, you know, they appeal to you when you're doing erotic talk, and kind of how does that play out?
Well, to me, you all are very exotic and international. Yeah, so I don't know, was that the question?
Sure.
Funny enough to me, an American accent doesn't necessarily feel like it's an accent. I think it's because I watch movies and music and all of that. So there are different areas in America that sounds more prominent, maybe. But you know, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of the American accents for sure.
So because there's so much movie and Hollywood content, you feel like it's not as exotic from your perspective?
Well, yeah, it's still not necessarily what I hear every day around me, but it's not as foreign as someone with a German accent or someone with even a Canadian accent to me sometimes is different. So, yeah.
If you can tell the difference between Canadian and American, I'm impressed because I cannot.
Sometimes. Not always, but sometimes.
Interesting. Well, even within the U.S., you have something like 22 different accents, right? Obviously, you've got, say, New York or Boston, which are pretty strong accents versus a Southern drawl, right?
Yeah. Yeah, those are definitely, yeah.
Right. And so you may not know where those are at, but that's there. All right. So as far as I know, Bravery, you are the only performer that I'm aware of in South Africa. Are you aware of anybody else?
No, as far as I know, I'm the only one. That's why I considered doing it. I figured it would be very different for everyone trying to find something. Yeah.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about South Africa for the GWA land out there and a little bit about the couple of languages that happen to exist. And I'll explain kind of why I'm even aware of that. So
South Africa, yeah.
I know. Well, but what drove it down home to me is I had the chance to go there for some business with a business partner. And we were actually in the north of the country at a place called Pilansberg, which is a recreational and park area. And as we checked into the hotel and stuff, I was kind of excited to take a break from work. And one of the guys with us said, "Hey, go put on your costume."
Yeah.
And I was like, my what?
Yeah.
So, like, especially for Ava, like, not like, does that make sense to you? Anyway, it didn't to me.
No. Anyway, it doesn't make sense to me either.
So, I kind of said, "What do you mean?" He's like, "Oh, your costume. We'll go to the swimming pool." And I was like, oh, wow. You know, so anyway, he proceeded to mock me and make fun of me, but that was okay. He says, well, you Americans call it your swimsuit. That's not as exciting, you know? And I was like, oh, okay, fine.
I didn't even know but that was a thing. I forgot about that being a thing or that it's different. I had no idea.
But that's an example. That sort of term is normal to you. And yet there's terms within other countries. There's Australia, South Africa that are very different. So yeah, tell us a little bit about South Africa and let's talk about some of the way that English is a little bit different for you than what our listeners might be used to.
Okay. Well, in my opinion, South Africa is a beautiful, beautiful country. It's not a lot of people know about it or even realize how modern it can be. But there's little secrets in South Africa that's very special and unique. Like for an example, there's this place, Plettenberg Bay, that I love going on holiday. It has this very secret beach that you have to hike up onto. But it has these there's three or four tiny castles built on the beach. And nobody knows about it. Like very few people even know it exists. So we have secrets like that. That's just very special. Language-wise, it's like the costume. Yes, it's a swimsuit.
I learned the hard way.
Yeah. Or things like you would call it a corn on the cob. We'd call it milis. Even the English people here, we call them milis.
Where's that word from?
It's an Afrikaans word, but The English people use it too. Like they would look at you weird if you call it a corn. they would not understand what you're saying. And like things like a traffic light would be a robot for me. And I would, if I was even anywhere else, I would call it that. And probably people would not understand what I'm saying.
I'm just appreciative because I'm now imagining that people always talk about a robot overlord. So I'm now imagining a robot overlord
just pointing you which way to go. Yeah.
Interesting. So you mentioned Afrikaans. So I know what that is. So for the benefit of the folks on with us here today in the audience, explain a little bit about that language. Because most people had probably never heard of it unless you spent some time around the country of South Africa.
Yeah, not a lot of people know that it exists, I feel like. Because whenever I mention that I am Afrikaans, people just kind of freeze. They don't know how to respond. But it's very similar, I feel like, to Dutch. I've mentioned before, it's like a lazy version of Dutch. So if someone were to talk Dutch to me, I can, or at least slowly, I can generally understand what they're trying to say. So it's a combination of maybe 80 to 90% Dutch with a little bit of English and German mixed in, maybe.
But it's evolved into its own language, right? It's quite, if you look at the language chart, it's its own language, quite different from Dutch or German at this point.
Yeah, it's very, very different. Spelling, pronunciation, all of that is just very, that's why I'm saying it's very lazy, I feel like, compared to actual Dutch, especially.
Right. And to some degree, there's cultural differences between the Afrikaans people and kind of the English historical people. Like, you know, there's certain areas that are predominantly Afrikaans and others that are more English. But it is interesting, you look at it and you would think maybe the white population of South Africa was like all the same, but there's actually quite a cultural variance between the two. That was interesting to me as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think there's what, like 11 different languages in South Africa, maybe? I feel like I only know of 3 or 4, which sounds awful. I did it in school. I forgot. I'm old. Okay. So don't hate me. Yeah, so we have the Afrikaans, we have the English, but even the English, it's not like how you mentioned, it's not like normal English overseas, it's very unique. Then we have Tswana and Xhosa, Sotho. I only know certain sentences in Tswana, maybe. I can say I'm hungry, that's about it. Otherwise, like if you move more inland into South Africa, the type of culture you get here is very different to what you find closer to the sea or the coastal areas. Inland is more Afrikaans focused, I feel like.
And it's a lot of farming. I mean, it's a lot of rural farming stuff because that's the background for a lot of the Afrikaners, right?
Yes, the farming and a lot of the wildlife is more inland too. So that's also very unique from South Africa, all of the animals. It's beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I've been very lucky to be able to go on so many game drives and see so many different things. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that's a little bit about South Africa and Afrikaans. So I'm sure some people would love to hear what Afrikaans sounds like. So can you give us a few examples?
Okay, let's see if I can introduce myself. Hello, my name is Bravery. And I am 27 years old and I play in South Africa. Yeah, how's that, I think? I think that made sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you. All right. And so for those of you that didn't catch it completely, Ava is in Germany.
Yeah.
And I am only aware of a few other performers. Do you know anybody else from Germany, Ava?
Not very closely, but I've noticed a few that are German.
Okay. And so tell us a little bit about, we talked about a little bit about it's a second language for you. So as you came in, started to work on this, you know, erotic audio from a German perspective, can you give us a little bit of an idea of kind of how you got here and what that experience has been like for you, having to learn English words and not even knowing all of their meanings in the way we use them, you know?
Yeah, well, that's been quite an experience. German is my native language, and I learned English in school, and I learned British English because I don't know, that's what's taught here is British English. And of course, we didn't learn dirty talk in school. So now I think my English is kind of a merger from this British English I initially learned, and GWA influence, I would say.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you told me one of our conversations that German dirty talk's not very sexy at all. Can you explain that a little
bit? Oh my God. I don't know. Just the thought is so cringy. And I've been asked several times to do an audio in German and to do a sexy audio in German. And I totally understand why this is fascinating for people and it's exotic and so on. And I think some of the people who ask were actually Germans themselves.
Oh, okay. I've seen a few German language ones, but they're pretty rare.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a bilingual one has been posted recently. Yeah. But honestly, I tried once and it was so cringy. Like it's literally impossible for me. It really doesn't work. Like when I speak English and when I make sexy audios in English, it's like I get, I don't know. It's easier to be to be naughty. It's like to overcome that barrier of shame. I don't know.
Is the second language like a protection then? That's a really interesting point. Do you feel safer?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's like I can express myself in a different way that's not possible in the language my mama taught me. And I don't know how you people do it in English, if it's your native language.
Interesting. So you're saying that in your native German, mm-hmm. it the sexy words are also culturally considered negative or dirty words. Is that correct?
No, I wouldn't say that, but it just doesn't sound nice. It just doesn't sound sexy.
Interesting. For those that may not know, German is a very literalist language, and engineers and doctors, it's very precise.
That's true.
Right. So yep. I mean, if I'm wrong, correct me. But my understanding is it's not as maybe flowery as some of the Latin based languages or English.
Yeah.
And so you don't have as many euphemisms. You don't have as many of the subtleties that we sometimes use in English. It's kind of literal descriptions of things. Is that correct?
Well, I think you could describe sex very detailed in German, but it right. wouldn't be sexy, you know?
Right.
Or maybe it's just a personal thing. Like I've listened to that bilingual audio I mentioned earlier, and that performer actually made it sound sexy. So maybe it's just me. I think it's just me.
I mean, German people must talk to each other sexily at some point. I refuse to believe that the entire population of German.
Well, yeah, of course it's happening. It just feels a little awkward.
And do you think that's mostly just you?
Probably, yes.
Okay. So that's interesting. So because it's a second language, you feel more comfortable exploring and expressing sexuality and thoughts because it's a second language. That's yeah. very interesting.
Yeah, I think so.
So when either of you, that's for either of you, when you started doing GWA, and obviously you saw scripts that were primarily written by, Americans and some UK folks, are there some words that you didn't know that surprised you? You're quickly looking up an Urban Dictionary? Like, how did that work?
I think I'm pretty fluent in my English, and because how to explain this. It's not that new for me with the English, because I don't know why exactly, but so when I read my first scripts, it just flew easily for me. I don't know. There are obviously okay. words that's more British that confuses the hell out of me.
Okay. Yeah. So what are those? What are those then?
The first time. I think it was pretty simple. Yeah.
So what are some of the British words then that maybe confused you? That's interesting.
I'm assuming it's a British word. It's Jill, like the jerking word, oh. jerking off version of, is it not? Right. Isn't
that? What's Jill? I have also never heard before that. So you're going to have to take this one. I did not know that term.
Well, so I think it's more American, to be honest with you. But so occasionally you'll see like to jerk off, right? Which is a masturbation mm-hmm. variation word. And I've seen occasionally, it's not common, but you'll see occasionally people talk about to jill off, right? Which is the female version of it. I hadn't seen it until I hit GWA either.
And
right?
there's but so jacking that, off too, isn't it?
Yeah, the same word. Exactly. Jack, Jill, right? Just like the nursery rhyme.
Of course that makes sense. Weird right. that it's now, a nursery rhyme, but still.
Right. Right. It's not commonly used, but and typically people will use the jerk off or like J-O-I, right? So we see the J-O-I tag, jerk off instructions. Mm-hmm. And that's used generically for men, you know, or women. But yeah, sometimes I've seen people reference it. But yeah, that one's unusual. But if you go to UK, right, the UK is wank.
Yeah, that's right? they won't different use... for me too. I know it exists, obviously, before, because I watch movies where they're like, you're a wanker. I don't use it. I think that's probably like the second or third time I even used the word wank.
Right. I actually use it.
Were you familiar with it before GWA? Because the British connection?
Yes.
Okay. So in the English you learned, what would be the primary word you'd use then for to masturbate if you were talking about that?
Well, that would be wanking. For guys and for girls.
Okay.
Actually.
That makes sense.
I just say I play with myself. I don't use a fancy word.
I just say I'm busy. That's it. I was busy. That's all you need to know.
I was busy is good.
Do you put that in scripts, Nat? Like, get busy with yourself? Is that how that works?
No, because my stage direction is ridiculous and I lead people up to orgasm. There is no improv involved. So
interesting. But yeah, it is interesting that there are terms like that, you know, we sometimes find hard to use, you know, and so even in English, I mean, the clinical mm-hmm. term, you've got clinical words, right? Like masturbate. And then we use all these other terms.
I mean, I think it's because I did a little bit of a deep dive on this after, I think, last time. A lot of them were clinical at first. They just became less clinical.
Oh, do you have an example?
Let me see if I can find the one, because I had a list pulled up, so I guess we can,
yeah. Cunnilingus, I just...
Okay.
Well, that so cunnilingus is a perfect example, right? That's the Latin, And, you know, if you go look in some reference books, that's the Latin, and you got to go back to Latin base. But I mean, you're never going to say to your lover, oh, honey, I'd like to give you some cunnilingus. Like, that just doesn't.
No, don't do that.
That doesn't work. Right.
It's actually a cunt also. Medical text, right. 1400. So in the 1400s, cunt is used as a medical term. It's then.
Really? Saints.
Yep.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I did not know
Interesting.
That. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and even the whole term pussy is a much more modern term with even though it's become the more accepted term in English. Sorry, Nat, go ahead.
You also have to understand that, like, the printing around this is very varied. One, it's hard to have, like, you know, documents from that far back. But it looks like at that time period it was used both in a medical setting and in a cultural setting.
So. Interesting. And what was the exact meaning that, I mean, is it the common meaning we understand now to have a different meaning?
I'm going to try to read this because it's in Old English. In the woman pay neck of the D bladder snort and is mad fast to the cunt. So in the woman, the neck of the bladder is short and attached to the cunt.
Interesting. Hmm. So that's a medical book. And so that was one of the original terms.
Yeah. And it would have appeared, I think, in text at that time because there was probably less separation between these words at that time.
Right.
But it's since, of course, I think that would probably not appear in a medical textbook today. So. Also, I want to emphasize that this is not fact checked. This is just like research I did. So take what I say with a grain of salt.
If somebody wants to fact check our discussion on a GWA backstage discussion, knock yourself out.
With the amount of people who fact check my scripts, somebody will.
Really?
Wow. It happens a lot.
People fact check your scripts?
Occasionally, and I also fact check my scripts, so I guess I kind of appreciate it, but it's also like, it's fantasy, guys. We can take a step back.
Anyway. Yeah, I always just like, don't overthink this. This is porn. It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. Okay. So Brave, you wouldn't necessarily use the word cunt because you're coming more from an American English perspective. Is that correct?
I guess it's weird because I always felt like we use more British words, but I think with erotic words, we don't use cunt at all.
Okay.
I can walk anywhere in South Africa and that's hardly ever, I can't think anyone uses it here. But then.
Either as an insult or an erotic word.
Not at all. Yeah. But I was I was reminded now, I don't know how I was reminded because we were talking about medical things, but the first time I tried to record a script, to me, all of the erotic words were like, they're naughty words. I'm not supposed to say them. So when I tried to record my first time, whenever I wanted to say the dirty word, my voice would instantly just go like super quiet, whispered and like, nobody can hear me say this. So I would have to say the word cock, but I would be like, cock.
But that sounds so cute. Do you still have that recording?
I basically had to redo the recording over and over again because at that time I had no idea how to edit anything. So every time I went soft with the word, I would be like, damn it. Even now when I talk naturally with people on Discord, like any of my friends, whenever I need to say a dirty word, it just automatically goes a little bit softer than it's supposed to. I don't know why.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're dealing with the same cultural shame that most of us do around those words.
Yeah, I was raised very, I'm supposed to be very conservative, I guess. So, yeah.
So, Ava, do you have that same, you know, predisposition? Mm. You said that in German words you can't do it, but how did you feel when you started using English words that are quote unquote dirty or as Natalie and I prefer, erotic words?
I found that discussion about pussy versus cunt very interesting because I noticed myself, I have a preference to use pussy in my scripts. But I wasn't aware that cunt is such a, well, that there's a preference actually for it by people from the UK. I've noticed that in talking to people, and I was surprised that they actually say, I don't like the word pussy. And I, but it's the nicer word to me. It just sounds nicer. So that was something that surprised me.
I feel the same as you do, yeah.
Yeah, but I think for me it's like, well, actually it's just easier to say it in English. I don't have a problem to say either in English. And I've recently done a recording where I actually scream the word cunt several times as a joke. And yeah, I could do that, no problem. But never ever in German.
Interesting. You know, here in the U.S., there's a fairly famous play called The Vagina Monologues that goes a few years back. But no, it's essentially dealing with this concept that those are words we don't say in public. And so, you know, the whole sort of acted out play, and it went around the country, and it basically promotes that idea that those are words that we should be more comfortable saying. We can sort of desensitize ourselves to the negative nature of them. And at least, you know, for me, I think it's interesting whether no matter what word you're using, most of the time we're using it in the erotic or positive sense, right? And yet there's this secret naughtiness, you know, that we all feel, right? It's just interesting to me that that's cross-cultural, you know?
Maybe because you wouldn't use it in everyday language.
Yeah, that's probably true. That's probably very true. All right, so there's a few other words that specifically, and like you said, it seems to be a US-UK divide. So the other one is panties and knickers. So I'm just curious where you fall on this debate.
I say panties. I say panties.
Sorry,
I don't
Nat.
Say knickers. Sorry.
Yeah. Right. So what about you, Ava?
Well, I would say panties. And I think knickers is such a funny word.
Interesting. Well, it is to American ears, but that's interesting. So Natalie, I assume you feel that same way, right?
Yeah, I would not use, I mean, I might use it when I'm doing one of the Victorian scripts I do, knickers. I use undergarments a lot more for that just because, and I think that is the trick with a lot of this in writing, is just trying to think which one of these terms is the most universal term that's not going to get anyone to pause.
Wow. And for you, it depends on the time period you write.
Well, it does, interestingly, but it depends more on the perceptions of the time period for which I write.
What do you mean?
Like, pussy was around during Victorian time periods. People used it. It predates that to at least about the 1500s. But I don't use it a lot in Victorian scripts because it doesn't sound like it would be Victorian, even though they definitely use the word.
In the time period.
Yeah.
But when you're doing a proper Victorian discussion, it probably wouldn't be in that language structure.
I mean, one, if you have not read Victorian erotica, you should, because there is a lot of it. Victorians were very kinky. Not all of it is good quality, but it's definitely worth just spending an afternoon exploring to see how they use it.
And you mean the original content?
Yeah, it's all.
You mean the original content?
So there were a lot of erotic magazines or erotic zines that took place during that time period, most of which are available online if you're on Wikipedia. That if you just want to spend an afternoon exploring how the Victorians thought about sex, are a lot of fun. They're frankly not very well written, most of them, but they are a lot of fun to pursue.
Interesting. So what are some words that we've maybe retained or that are you found interesting as you studied and prepared to do the Victorian stuff? And I know you invested a lot of time and energy in that. So what are some examples of words either from that time or that have carried forward that we use, or maybe that you want to resurrect? I don't know.
I mean, there's a lot more talk about weeping, which I use a little bit of. I try not to lean too heavily on that. There's also, I'll probably send this to you after so the listeners can have it, but somebody made a timeline of just historical terms for sex through the centuries. It's amazing.
Interesting.
I love it so much. Let me see if I can pull it up right now.
Yeah, that's fine. You know what? Send it. We'll put it in the show notes and put it on the post.
But it just has stuff like weeping widow's eye, or just, most of them are too hilarious to actually use in scripts because they take you out of it so much. But it's just so fascinating and so great. It's so much fun to look at.
Interesting. Okay. So what are some challenges that you guys have found being international performers to a primarily sort of American and, you know, I don't know, UK audience? Like, what were some of your perceptions and, you know, how'd you get to GWA? That's always a question somebody wants. And when you got here, what were kind of some of your experiences and perceptions? Ava, why don't you start?
Well, I got here by coincidence. I actually discovered Reddit by Gone Wild Stories. I was a writer on Gone Wild Stories. And then I started like talking to people about my content, and I don't even remember so clearly, but I think we talked about like what kind of erotic content one likes. And I was like, yeah, so you read all my stuff. Do you also watch videos, or what's your preferred kind of erotica? And the other person said, well, I listen to audio. And I was like, what? What's that? I literally, right. I had no idea it even existed. I was totally clueless. And then they recommended GWA to me, and I was like, ooh, ah. Well,
but
that's
you were
something.
Already writing, you were already writing erotica on your
yes,
own, is that correct?
In okay. English on Gone Wild Stories, yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you actually came from just writing and mostly creative stories, I assume, and then
no,
and then
both.
Came more
I wrote fiction and autobiographical stories.
Oh,
yeah.
I did not know that.
Okay. They are not online anymore. Yeah, I've decided to take them down for the sake of anonymity when I started with the audio thing.
That's probably why. So when you showed up at GWA, mm-hmm. kind of what was your initial experience? And you've only been here, what, a few months?
Yes, yes. I posted my first audio in June, I think. So it hasn't been long.
Okay.
Well, my first impression was like total chaos. Like I found it really, really hard to find the content that I was looking for. I was confused by tags. I was like the filter wasn't working like I expected. It was right. like... totally confusing, and I ended up listening pretty much to the same people because it was so difficult to find new stuff. And then eventually I made a verification request because I just very impulsively, like I was, oh, I want to try that out. That's so cool. I just, and then I panicked and I was like, oh my God, my voice is out there and my stories, and oh my God, people from my real life will recognize me. And like I got totally panicked and I deleted it again.
The verification?
Yes, the verification, like the next day or 2 days later, because I was like, ah, well. But there was one person who had listened to the verification and got in touch with me and said, yeah, well, I saw you deleted it. And I was hoping to hear audios from you because I like your voice. And I was like, yeah. Sorry, I changed my mind. And well, and then a few months later, I changed my mind back and I made another try. And yeah, here I am.
Well, I'm glad you're here. And I think a lot of your fans are. I think it's awesome to have a different perspective. And you're very cute. You write fun stuff. So I've loved working
Thank
with you.
You
just so far. You're welcome. All right, Brave. So tell us kind of how you got here and what your some of your initial experiences were.
Okay, well, mine isn't. The way I found audios was I was on Pornhub. And I kept getting, it was maybe 2 years ago, 2018, during Christmas time. And there kept being like a recommendation of something I needed to watch. And I was like, okay, let me just see what this is because I don't understand. This is, doesn't even look like porn. And I clicked it and it was a creator. It's I don't think he's on Reddit at all, but it was a creator's voice. And I was like, whoa, I feel this feels nice.
So you like the audio stuff better than the visual stuff right off the bat?
Yeah, as soon as I found it, I was like, ooh, I don't, this is new. This is different. I feel different. But yeah. So, that person only posted, like, I think two or three on Pornhub because it was more of having people find him. Otherwise, he's on YouTube and he had a Patreon and everything. So I got so curious about how all of this works because I knew ASMR and stuff like that was a thing, but I never knew there was an erotic side of it, which
right.
obviously I should have known better because there's erotic for everything. But, so I became a patron of his and made a bunch of very, very great friends very lovely woman that while I was there, they taught me how to write scripts because I've always loved the idea of stories. And they taught me how the format works and what things to look out for. And I wrote a couple of scripts that I sent in to him specifically. And the same people that were that taught me how to do the scripts and kind of guided me, they were talking about starting their side where they wanted to just try and record. Mm. So they were actually, I was just in the discussions with them. I was just there learning how they
did. Was this recording on Patreon mostly?
It was on his private server or just like on DMs, or we were just friends talking basically.
Okay,
and
got it.
I was learning how, what type of programs they use for recording, like Audacity, and just where to find the scripts. And then they said that they posted on Reddit. So I went to go check. And then while I was there, I got super, super, super curious seeing all of the amazing voices and all of the different kinds of things you can get, like the improvs and the ramble faps and all of the kinds of stories people write. So I found that there aren't any other South Africans, like I mentioned before. So I thought, well, I'm going to try something. If people think South African voices suck ass, then it's perfectly fine. At least I tried.
You sound very wonderful.
I tried, and I might have made some, like, one person smile. That was my mindset at the time. And I got very positive feedback from the beginning. It was really wonderful seeing how many people enjoyed my voice and my accent. I was surprised at how quickly it grew because I posted my first audio last year, February. So it's been a while. But I've been on and off for a while. I've had a time where I consistently posted 3 audios a week. Then I went to a month of just being not posting at all. And now I'm back regularly. But it's a way for me to explore myself, I guess would be a way to say it. So certain ideas or certain kinks that I wouldn't even known I had, I get to explore and show people and share people. And someone that listens to my voice, they can get it too. But the reason I originally posted is I just wanted to have someone feel like my type of audio specifically is very caring and appreciative and worshiping and things like that. So I want people to feel loved and needed. So that's how I felt when I listened to audios, and I want people to feel that way. And yeah.
Aww, interesting.
That's so sweet. There's something, I mean, I've always felt about the sound of the human voice, just how nurturing and caring it can be.
Yeah,
and even if it's performing or acting, it's just knowing that there's somebody out there, sometimes on the other side of the world, who can care and feel this raw human emotion with you is really comforting.
It is. It's really a wonderful feeling.
Yeah, and that's the reason this medium, you know, attracts me personally as well, is not only the ability to feel it, but the ability to express that very human connection and very human emotion. And you know, every one of us is different, you know, no matter whether you, what your voice type is, there is no single accent, no single voice sound, you know, that doesn't work here. I mean, you know, I've done audios with, I have one audio in particular that I did with a gentleman from somewhere in the Pacific and a British guy, you know, because he's like, yeah, I'm not Australian. And I'm like, yeah, I have no idea where your accent's from, man. He's like, yeah, let's leave it that way. I said, okay. So I literally have no idea where he's from. And I was worried because, you know, I've got this generic American accent, you know, and then this really interesting accent, you know, somewhere, I don't know, New Zealand or Oceania, somewhere in there, I think. And then this British guy. And when I got done, I was really nervous to post it because of this blend of accents. And yet, it's probably one of my most listened to collaborations to this day. And yet it's this variety of accents around the world, all taking care of, to your point, Bravery, of, in this case, one girl, right? Because I'm doing M-preps, but of one listener. And I just think it's pretty cool that we can share those kind of things very emotionally across culture, across, you know, it's pretty interesting to me. I agree with Natalie, the emotional component that we can share with each other is really what kind of keeps me here. Versus visual porn, personally.
It is. Yeah, for me, it's
Go ahead.
Sorry, I can relate so much to that because I have never really liked visual porn. I think it's a question of taste. But what I find in audio is there's such a broader variety. Like there's audio for different audiences, and it's like you have this connection, like you mentioned, that is, I don't know. I think the biggest strength of audio is that it can be so immersive, that you have someone speak to you, like you're included.
Yes.
And whereas with video, you always like a bystander watching other people fuck. And
you're a voyeur into people that didn't really want you there.
yeah, kind of. And it's no, well, for me at least, it's no emotional connection at all. And that's why I would always prefer audio.
No, I agree with you. I've never been a big visual. I mean, you know, don't get me wrong. Bodies are nice. And, you know, I agree with you, Brave. I was bumming around for no good reason one day on Pornhub. And I'm like, wait, there's all this audio stuff there. You know, it's not how I got here, but I did notice that there's this. And there are a few GWAers that promote there. Last I looked, I haven't looked in the last month. But last time I looked, there were a few of them. But to your point, there's not very many. It's like this really small subsection on there of a, obviously, ginormous worldwide site, right? I mean, but it is interesting that I don't know for how many people, I wonder out there, to your point, Ava, how many people, if they knew that this content was available, if they would prefer it. That's a really interesting question to me.
Yeah, I think many would, but it's not so well known yet.
Yeah, I will say, like, with my particular journey, I've never seen visual porn. Like, obviously, I go on the internet, so I've seen what it looked like. I would sit down to watch it, and I've never seen one from beginning to end because it just never is interested to me. So when I discovered audio porn, this was the first time I really have ever started engaging with porn in any sense because I just didn't know it existed. And then I found it and like, oh, I really like this. And I feel bad that it's, I guess, so hard to realize that it's a thing.
Right.
That's actually something I've I don't even know if I should say this, but I have some of my improv audios that have been very popular. I tried to make like a video of them and post them on Pornhub to try and have people find more, or just so that there's a little bit more to find. Because it is really, there's so many people that are looking for something like that and they never know where to start even. So,
yeah. Did you have any success with that? I mean, I've considered it for the same reason, just for generally promotional, not necessarily for me, but just for the idea that, hey, there's this whole world of us out here on GWA.
Yeah.
Did you have any success with that?
Yeah, I posted like three improv of my improv audios on there. And literally, I would post one and then 3-4 months later, I would remember, oh yeah, maybe I should post another one. But even doing that, I have like 1,000, I think it's subscribers or followers or something on there. And I don't even do anything on Pornhub. Like, so they find it and they enjoy it, and they definitely get comments asking where to get more or what, how, like they didn't know it was a thing. So it's definitely, people are finding it. I just don't know if enough people are finding it, but I think it helps at least a little bit.
Interesting. All right. So one of the things we talked about a little bit, and I think Ava wanted to talk about, was the whole creative process, and everybody goes about their audio. So kind of what did you want to talk about in that regard, Ava? Let's make sure we get that in.
Well, I was, what's very interesting to me is what type of audios different people prefer to make, because I think that can be very different. Like, for example, there are some creators who do mostly ramble faps and they feel very comfortable doing it. And I get that it's maybe easier because you usually improvise. And but I, for example, I'm someone who really, I tried one that was so awkward. It's just really, really not my thing. And that started, that made me wonder how you guys see this, if you have a preferred type of audio that you really like to make. Like, what's your thing?
Well, I think for me, it depends a little bit on like the voice. Like as I look at scripts personally, and obviously, again, I'm doing M4Fs, there's a lot that I can't do. I mean, I do not sound like your young, you know, 19-year-old neighbor boy, right?
So, right. So there's some with some very deep voices.
Well, I'm just saying, I don't, you know what I mean? I maybe it's just me, but I don't feel like I can play like, you know, oh, your dorky, you know, neighborhood boyfriend. Hi, how, like, I don't think that works.
Actually, that's really interesting.
That was pretty good.
One interesting, and we might talk about this in a later episode as well, depending on who we get on, is I've noticed that women or female voice actors tend to be a lot more comfortable playing things that aren't their kinks than male voice actors. Like I know a lot of men who identify as dominant that will only play dominant roles, or men who identify as submissive who only play submissive roles. But I know a lot more
That's a fair point.
Women who do both. And I'm just wondering, and I have wondered, I think for a little while, what the difference is between how you conceive of that or the reason why.
That's an interesting point. I'm just saying for me, I mean, and I haven't made any secret, I'm not a big fan of rape and incest stuff. And I get that people do it and I'm not kink shaming. That's cool. Do your thing. I've had real life issues with that and with friends. And I just like, I can't wrap my mind around it. I'm just not personally comfortable with it. And I feel like I can't do, I mean, I could try it, but I don't feel like I can do justice to, you know, a well-written script for something. So for me, it's not necessarily that I will only do certain things. It's just, I feel like my voice only allows me to kind of do a range of things. But to your point, Nat, and in fact, Ava and I had this experience in the last week. She put out a sub reading and I thought, okay, I like her. She's fun. We've talked. I'm just going to go read it. And if she hates it or people hate it, like that's totally fine.
I was
fine
loving it.
I know, right? And I knew you well enough to know like you'd appreciate the irony, right? That, you know, that I'm doing mostly MDOM stuff. And I just read this total, you know, I'm submitting everything to you. Take me. You know.
It was so surprising.
I don't know. So, all right. Creative process. Bren Brave, you said you like mostly more comfort soft audios. Explain to us a little bit about how kind of your thought process there.
I'm trying to think. I think words, English. I think it's very much focused on my personality. I'm very much someone that wants to make sure people feel good and feel happy and loved. So obviously I'm very happy if someone does that for me. So I think it's literally just my personality. I'm a very loving person. I don't want to sound big-headed when I say that, but I'm very focused on making sure people feel loved. And even with my kinks, I'm very much submissive, but I do some dom audios. Most of them would generally be scripts, but even if I do dom, it's always the softer, very loving dom, because I think there might not be as many audios of it. It's very much, maybe I just don't find them because I don't specifically look for other female audios, but
right,
I did some.
David does some.
Yeah, I couldn't be evil dumb. I just don't have it in me.
Right.
I can only do it if it's very soft and caring. I think it's just, I never want someone to feel like they're not good enough or make them feel bad inside. And I know that's a kink. I'm perfectly fine with that. Whatever you're into, that's perfect. But I want someone to feel wanted, to feel loved. And that's why I focus on that. That's why also I'm not okay with doing cheating or cuckold audios. I get so many people asking me to do them, but my voice would never be able to allow me to do that. Exactly how you said, your voice would just instantly show that you're not into this. So,
right. Yeah, I've struggled. I mean, I'm not opposed to doing some M sub stuff or whatever, but I think, Nat, you're right. You see more flexibility with the women than you probably do with the men. And I'm, again, somebody will say, oh, I do all of it. I'm sure you do, but I would guess generally, you know, you don't see as much of it. And whether that's voice, I mean, Nat and I both have some, one of our good friends does mostly M sub stuff. And it's, you know, I don't think I could do what he does. And conversely, it might sound very interesting if he was trying to do some of the MDOM stuff. But to some degree, I feel like on content, Ava, excuse me, that we're at least many of us that don't write our own content, like we're limited by content that's available, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So you mean you would do a broader variety if there were more scripts?
Personally, yeah.
I would. Like that too, yeah.
I've never seen it like that. Because when I don't find a script about something, I just write it myself.
Interesting.
And for me, it's like a mixture, I think, of the reasons you've mentioned. Like, of course, I go according to my preferences. I would never do something that makes me feel bad. I have my limits. I have things that are triggering for me. For example, all kinds of breeding and pregnancy stuff that's not my thing, that I know I wouldn't feel good doing that, so I don't. And also I think about what fits with my voice, but actually not that much, because I don't like to listen to myself.
Oh, nobody does.
And yeah, you've mentioned that in the last episode.
I think I'm very weird about it.
So it's sometimes...
Well, some performers do.
Really? Do some performers do? So, Brave, you said you'd like to listen to your voice. Explain that.
I never used to. That's kind of rare. When I was younger, I used to think I'm cringy as hell. But whenever I finish recording and I'm busy editing, I kind of enjoy it. It's nice. I don't know why.
It's totally okay. Cool. I mean, you're lucky. I wish I would enjoy editing. But, well, sometimes I choose content because I want to explore. That's, I think, another reason. Like, I choose something. I'm not sure if that's a kink of mine or not. It might become a kink of mine. But I'm going to try it by making an audio about it.
Right. So, Natalie, you do a variety of content. So how do you kind of choose what you work on? And you've taken a lot of risks with your content. It's one of the reasons I appreciate what you do. So how do you kind of make that choice and choose to take some risks sometimes?
I don't really think of myself as that risk-taking, but thank you. With me, it's honestly, I start story first when I'm doing scripts. That's the thing. And then I think about what types of sex it would make sense for those characters to have. So it's always that's generally leading me, at least from a writing perspective. I'm not starting, in most cases, there are a few things that I've done that are a little self-indulgent, and you can guess on what those are, but... with most scripts, I tend to start with this idea of, oh, I have this character. What type of character or what type of person would this be like in the bedroom? So like with my detective series, which I've done a couple of, it makes sense for both those characters to be dominant because of how the role is. So that,
interesting.
So that tends to be there. And it's never, I will say I never do anything that's like a kinks that turn me off, because I think everyone has a couple of those or hard limits. Yeah. So things like scat or vor are things that I would not do just because I can't get into seeing those as sexual.
Right.
But I do play a lot with things that aren't specifically my kinks, but are kinks that I at least am entertained by, if that makes sense. So that's how I kind of get into it and do it. I will say that my range as a performer, because I do perform sometimes, is less than my range, I think, as a writer. I think probably because you're trying to act in the roles, you want to be good at it. There are less roles that I would be willing to do as a voice actor that I would be willing to play or conceive of as a writer.
I think that's a fair point. I mean, but you know, I don't mean by take risks, I guess, but you'll do things as interesting as the Kool-Aid Man series, right?
What?
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 Oh, you don't know. Okay. Oh, now she has to explain.
This was just people were late and we were talking, and I think some people were drunk and like we're making fun of the Kool-Aid Man, and I'm like, I should write an audio script about the Kool-Aid Man. And then the only thing you understand about a character is the fact that he says, oh yeah, you have to make the script about enthusiastic consent, because that's the only thing he can do is just say, oh yeah, a bunch of times. So there's a script about the Kool-Aid Man. having very consensual sex with the listener, which is a pretty
Well, and then the Boston Tea Party one was hilarious too. But
there was a sequel because there was a request for a sequel. Anyway, those are both recorded. Friends with both those people. So if you would like to check those out, I very much would promote that. But those are also not scripts like that, or I guess the one I did with Waluigi, where Waluigi was fucking someone. They're for fun. Like, if anyone is turned on by those, great. They're not made to be erotic. They're supposed to make you laugh. So.
Right. So here's the thing. Because Natalie and I share probably common TV history, this reference is probably lost on you, Bravery and Ava. But these were TV commercials from years ago promoting Kool-Aid drink, right? Drink you mix. And the character was this giant Kool-Aid jug, and he would bust through a wall. And literally, you know, his line was, "Oh, yeah!" You know, that was it.
That's like the weirdest mental image, trying to see that as erotic. My brain
is really not. But
why?
I mean, I did write on the script. Surprisingly, the Kool-Aid man is very good about asking for consent, despite the fact that he burst into someone's house without consent all the time.
This goes
in itself.
It is. He's a very complex character. You have to understand.
But I think that's a point of something that's like culturally lost, right? Like most of us in the U.S. probably remember those commercials as kids, right? And yet to both of you, that's like, that is nonsense. Like that doesn't make any sense at all, right?
I'm not sure if I might have seen that commercial, but I'm not sure. It kind of rings a bell, but I'm not sure.
Go ahead, Nat.
I mean, it is something I'm cognizant of as a writer and something I guess feel fortunate about as being part of, I guess, what is the, I guess, most predominant culture on the audio subreddits is, I feel fortunate in that regard because there are certain things you can do with characters you grew up with that might be a little bit harder to do if you grew up in a country that's less well represented on the server.
That's true. That's true. Do either of you two find, like I say, you come across a script and find difficulties or things that confuse you? And if so, what was the kind of most, like, this doesn't make sense? I'm just curious if you had any of those experiences.
Well, yes, but I can't remember them right now. But it's mostly if it's a script using, like, very big English words and I'm like, I don't even know how the hell to pronounce these things. What is this? So if it's a very fancy English word, I'm like, I'm going to dumb this down. So instead of using the big word, I'm going to just use like, I'm hungry or I'm horny or I'm wet. I'm not going to use like the fancy word.
So you're not going to do the lasciviousness term or...
be able to pronounce it at all, probably.
Interesting.
I would actually look it up if I find a word in a script. It happens from time to time that I find a word that I'm not familiar with, and then I look it up in an online dictionary that also has an like audio function where you can listen to how it's pronounced.
Right.
So,
what happens with me is because I generally would know what that means because in the sentence it makes sense. Like, okay, so it should mean this. Mm. But then I know me trying to say the word would sound so uncomfortable. It's going to be obvious that I have no idea what the hell I'm saying. So
right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I do the same thing. There's a number of, while I like the story or like, you know, 90% of the narrative, there's sometimes a handful of words I either don't feel like would roll off the tongue or I don't choose to use sometimes. Right. Yeah. So I do personally pull a lot of my scripts into just Google Docs and I'll just, you know, I just quickly edit the, you know, whatever, 2, 3, 10 words and you can find and replace, you know, and boom, boom, boom. And then I've got a script that I'm more comfortable with. Plus it's frankly easier to read than pastebin, but you know, so yeah, I have a tendency to improv. It's no secret to anybody that listens. So, you know, but I think changing words into your language you're comfortable with, I would give that as sort of advice to folks out there. Look at the script. If there's a term, a language, you know, something that's especially not critical to the story, change it, you know, to fit your cultural reference or your own, you know, kind of limits or your own, even your own speaking style. I mean, I have a certain speaking style, and there's a word in a script I just did. In fact, it's presentating bravery. So yeah, it talks about presentating position.
What?
Exactly.
It's like a presentation, but erotic.
I think that was the point, right? So it's kind of a cool word, and I wanted to keep it to the writer, but I actually messed it up more than I've messed up any other line in any script I've done, and had to restart it because it just didn't roll off my tongue, right? So it's a kink script as a dom. It's just basically head down, you know, rear end up, essentially, right? But yeah, it's presentation position is how I would have said it myself, but it's written as presentating. And I was like, huh, well, I'll honor what the writer wrote, but it didn't roll off my tongue. So, I mean, I think other people do the same thing. So, interesting.
Like being, obviously with, I don't know, maybe it's a South African thing, but all people that aren't naturally English, the way I would arrange my sentences would be very different to what it would be written down. So I would sometimes, if I'm reading the script and I feel like I'm stumbling over a sentence too much, I would just swap some of the words around to make it easier for me to pronounce, to just
read.
So
the grammar structure, you actually sometimes change the grammar structure itself.
Yeah, sometimes I have to do that. But now, I don't know if this is a normal thing to do, but I don't read scripts too much before I record them. I read like the first section. I read the first section just to have an idea of the scene,
the pace,
of the atmosphere and
the
stuff like that. Yeah. If it's something I would be good at. Because I see the tags, I'm like, okay, I can do those. And then I see the feeling and then I decide. So I read when I record, it's generally the first time I've read it. So it's probably not the very smart thing to do, but
it's very impressive.
I do the same thing. Most of mine are cold reads, Ava. I do the exact same thing. I look at tags. If it's interesting, I save it. Because I'm busy, you know, and then if I have time, I pull it up, look quickly at like the first kind of scene, like Brave said, you set the scene and kind of get a pace for the writer and go, okay, I can do this. And then sometimes I'm a fast reader, so I'll skim it. But yeah, some of mine, I don't read much at all. If I have trouble with it, that's when I have to edit the words.
Yeah, I've noticed too with me is if I've read it like the whole thing before, sometimes it's like I try and overact, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So reading it cold without any, it's easier for me to have my emotions flow through the script than having already.
They're more honest.
Yeah.
Completely honest. Yeah. I mean, you do sometimes screw up the words, but yeah, and it depends on the type of this. It depends on the type of script and complexity. I mean, for complex scripts, then I agree with you, Ava. You kind of have to take the time and really know them. Especially if there's a lot of character development, you really got to get a feel for the character.
Yeah, obviously with those.
Well, with me, I think it's because I'm not a native speaker. They really, really turn out better when I rehearse them. So I read them aloud, out loud several times because I just need that, I guess. And that's also a reason why I prefer to record my own writing, because it flows much easier and I don't have to rehearse it because, I already know the words.
What percent of your own writing versus script? Sorry, Nat, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, Ava, what percent of your own writing versus scripts do you do?
Well, I haven't made a calculation, but I think it's a little bit more own writing versus script fills.
Okay. So go ahead, Nat.
I was just saying, I mean, there are times where I think because I read scenes out loud whenever I'm writing, and I do record sometimes from just like, sometimes I'm really tempted to give the character to myself. And sometimes it doesn't make sense, I guess. Just because the character isn't right for, I think, my voice. So sometimes it's a little bit of like, oh, I don't want to give this person up, but I really think somebody else is going to do this better than me. And they always do. And they're fantastic fills. But you do get a little attached to the characters sometimes.
Yeah, and you do very character driven. I mean, I guess I haven't talked to as many other writers, but are some of them more like, hey, I want this story, so the characters are less critical?
How do you mean?
Well, just, hey, I want to write a story about this kink or this scene, right? So the characters are far less important to the story itself.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's some, and I'm a fan of some people who just do scenes. I tend to write a little bit less like that, but I know a lot of people who do, and I think that's great. And it's definitely a demographic that I think is very well served, as far as sometimes you want to explore the kink. Doesn't really matter who's doing it.
Right. Right.
And sometimes you do just need, I think, a, you know, this is what this is. So.
Okay. We're at a little over an hour. So I want to keep, promised our listeners I would keep this shorter. So
probably wise after the last one.
I know. I should apologize. We had no intention of going 2 hours. We just started talking and suddenly it was, I don't know, it was what, almost, like quarter minutes to 2 hours. When we got, well, at least when I paid
you
attention
to the
time.
Over-spoil so. Everyone.
Well, I think it makes a problem to listen to. So what I'm going to try and do is I've loved this. I very much appreciate your time. So as we get ready to wrap up, just any maybe advice you guys might have for either other international performers or even domestic performers, things you'd like to hear. So go ahead and feel free to share any advice or suggestions with the listener base out there.
I think I would say if you have an accent like me, don't feel shy about it. Just go ahead, record anyway, because you will be surprised. People like it even if you don't like it.
Well, I think you sound lovely.
Thank you. I don't.
You do sound lovely. Yeah, I'm also
brave.
With me, I was very nervous, like I explained, with saying dirty words or like my first recording. My heart was racing so fast. But just see it as you're alone in your room talking to yourself. If you're not happy with how it turned out, you can always delete it. Nobody has to hear it. But you'd be surprised at how many people will enjoy your voice or your accent or whatever you are willing to share with them. So you don't need to be anxious like I am sometimes.
I think that is beautiful. Natalie, any final thoughts you'd like to share with us?
Well, I mentioned this in, I think, the last episode as well, but I think it's a good final thought here as well. Is if the scriptwriter, and most scriptwriters are like this, say that the accent doesn't matter, then the accent doesn't matter. Go perform it. Have fun with it. A lot of times the accent adds a fun, interesting spin on the character. So even if you think your accent might not be right for a certain role, at least try it. See how it turns out. See how people respond.
Yeah, it is interesting to me that, you know, I was talking to another collaborator in Australia and we had the subject of accent and we were talking about this just briefly before we started. But so it is interesting that what people perceive as exotic, they often also perceive as erotic, right? So there's this connection in the head between the unknown and sexiness. It's really, really kind of an interesting play, I think. I mean, how do you guys feel about that as not being from the U.S.?
Well, I notice it when I listen to different accents. I like it very much. And for me, everything is exotic, but a German accent. but I still have trouble wrapping my head around people finding the German accent sexy.
Fair point.
I think with me, I do enjoy the exoticness of other accents, definitely. But I also, for me to be able to enjoy them, I need to have a picture in my head that is realistic. For some reason, an American accent is realistic, which is weird. But yeah, so as long as I can understand, because some heavy accents, I do struggle to understand them. But voices is just, it's so personal and so beautiful. And you don't have to change anything of yourself, because there's always going to be someone that enjoys your accent or your voice this specific way, I guess.
No matter what your voice, no matter what your voice sounds like, you can bring intimacy and real growth and realness to any character you're playing, or if you're just playing yourself, then yourself. And I think regardless of what accent you have, people will appreciate that.
Yes, definitely.
I think that's a beautiful thought. All right. I want to thank our guests, my awesome co-host, Totally Not Natalie, Ava Lee from Germany, and Bravery Audios from South Africa. Thanks very much. And go listen to all their subs.